Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining us today. It's my pleasure to be part of your day. It's also my pleasure to reintroduce to you yet another time our good friend Joan Price, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Hello there, Jim. Thank you.
It's good to have you back.
Thank you.
And tell the audience how happy you are.
I'm so happy.
You're all a Twitter, aren't you?
Right. You got it.
It's good to have you back, Joan.
Thank you.
We haven't, you didn't know I was going to ask you about this, but all the buzz these days, at least since yesterday, is the time delay issue.
Have you been
tracking any of that?
Just what I've read in the papers.
Yeah. Well, of course, as we know, this is just a little bit of Washington news we have to cover, Joan. Tom DeLay, the House Majority Leader, right?
That's right.
He's
the number two man in the House.
Right. He's the number two man in the House behind Dennis Hastert, who is the
Speaker
of the House. But he's really the Speaker for everybody. He's kind of he covers the whole waterfront, whereas I know he's obviously a Republican, but the Majority Leader is the one that can be the hammer, as they call Mr. DeLay, right?
Right, exactly.
He's the guy that whips people into shape and keeps their members from wandering off the reservation. But he's run into a little bit of a controversy down in his home state of Texas, hasn't he?
Right, that he's been indicted, I guess, for allegedly accepting illegal, I don't know, this may not be exactly correct, it sounds pretty complicated, but it has to do with breaking campaign finance laws, allegedly, and
right,
accepting illegal contributions from corporations.
Well, the way I understand it, in Texas, corporations can't donate directly to candidates.
Right.
And so what this district attorney in this county, which is the Austin County area, it's not Austin County, but it's in that area. I can't think of the name of the county. Stewart, maybe. I've forgotten. Anyway, that district attorney, who's kind of a notorious, almost infamous district attorney for some of the things that he's done, he has indicted DeLay and others because he says what they did was to circumvent that Texas law. They had the corporations donate the money to the National Republican, the NRC, and then that money was taken from that group and given back to the state politicians. So they sort of try to bypass the state law, and he says that's wrong. But what he's getting them on is conspiracy to do that.
Okay.
That's what this is all about, is they've been charged with conspiracy. But what's interesting, though, Joan, is even though he's innocent until proven guilty, the House rules require him to step aside.
No, the Republican Party rules.
Okay, all right. Thank you for correcting me.
Yeah.
The Republican Party rules require him to step aside in his leadership role until it's all cleared up.
Right. It's only temporary.
Right. Well, it may not be.
I didn't want people to think that he had to resign his post permanently.
No, that's right. He's temporarily replaced until this resolved.
Right.
And if he's acquitted, then or if the case is dropped, then he'll go back. And if he's not, he'll allegedly probably have to leave the House of Representatives.
Now, do you know much about the man who has temporarily replaced him, Roy Blunt?
Yes, just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But you probably know more about him, so tell us about it.
No, that's why I'm asking you.
Yeah, no, I know who he is and what he, and I think he's a staunch partisan. He's probably not as pugnacious as Mr. DeLay is, though.
Okay.
Few people are, I think. but you know what's interesting? Here's what's interesting, Joan. I was listening to yesterday on the news. I was listening to a CNN report about this guy DeLay, and basically they went a long time describing the traits of this individual, the political characteristics, the leadership style, the management style, on and on. And they talked for quite a long time without mentioning his name. And I remember thinking, you know, you could take that minute and a half that they just did and apply that to an awful lot of politicians on both sides of the aisle. And half, and over half of them would kind of be proud of it.
Well, yeah, that's probably true. Although he seems to be well known for being, as you call him, the Hammer.
That's his nickname.
Right. And so he's the only one with that nickname.
But this is this is interesting civics, I think, Joan. That's the reason I wanted to bring it up. It's an interesting part of a civics lesson, don't you think?
What part? You mean in terms of his indictment?
The enforcement of the campaign finance rules. You know, even if whether the guy's correct in indicting them or not, but just the fact that process happens, the process of a leader stepping aside until things are cleared up. I think that's all part of the civics lesson.
Oh, probably, yeah. And I think we're going to see more about campaign finance laws in general, because we have the federal law, which has, I guess, been controversial, and I think there may be some court cases ahead that could end up at the Supreme Court and see what happens to that.
Right. Well, one of the things that makes this particular issue so interesting is one of the things Mr. DeLay was successful in doing is he was successful in getting more Republican state representatives and senators elected, and that actually wound up resulting in redrawing the lines, the district lines.
Well, the lines were being redrawn, and
right.
He was, I guess, supposedly trying to ensure a Republican majority in the Texas legislature.
Which he did.
Yes,
he's
credited with doing. Right.
Yes, and this district attorney, who's a Democrat, and who is operating out of, you know, that county there in Austin is kind of a unique part of Texas, isn't it? I mean, Texas is a predominantly red state, and the Austin area is not red.
Okay. Yeah, I did not know that.
It's very blue.
Okay.
It's a pretty Democrat stronghold there. So of all the
places...
You mean
a Republican stronghold?
No, it's a Democrat.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
It's a Democrat stronghold.
Texas is mostly red state, so it's mostly Republican.
That's
which
exactly
is interesting, because
right.
It didn't used to be that way, I don't think.
Neither did Mississippi, neither did Alabama, neither did Georgia. You know, Texas is
right, no, but I'm thinking Texas since it spawned presidents and things like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. But this is going to be interesting to track, and I just wanted to bring it up because I just think it's an important thing for us to observe, Joan, about the way our government works, the logical processes. You know, even if the people aren't logical, the process is pretty logical,
and that's good.
And you know, very much very orderly. I like the orderly part. Stand by, quick break. 20 after, we're going to get into the letter right after these messages. Here's Joe Cocker to take us out. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour.
Waiting for the break of day.
I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, let's get into the letter. And the lead story is skilled workers will be harder to find in 2006. You know what, Joan? I got to make a little adjustment to your lead line there.
Okay.
They're already hard to find.
I figured that was where you were going.
I don't think we have to wait till two. I think that ship has already sailed, Joan.
Well, we're saying harder. Hard as
okay.
It is now, it's
okay,
going to get worse.
Fine.
So.
Fine.
Ha.
But she's right. It does say harder to find.
Yeah.
But, you know, Joan, I don't think I want to see that.
Well, yeah, harder because as hard as it is now, harder means a lot harder.
I ran into a buddy of mine who's in the construction business Saturday night.
Yeah.
And I said, how's business? He said, business is great, except I got one big problem. I said, what? He said, I can't find skilled workers.
Oh.
He didn't say I can't find workers.
Workers.
He said, I can't find skilled workers, the craftsmen. The journeymen, the masters at their trade, the carpenters, the people who know how to, you know, how to lay a building out and take it and manage it and all that. For one thing, one of the in the construction business, this is being exacerbated, Joan, by all the hurricanes over the last couple of years.
Oh, of course.
If you're in Heartland America, where there are no hurricanes, all those people, if everyone that can, that want to have, you know, to live, so almost the nomad life, but make a whole lot of money, they've moved to Florida, and now they'll be moving to Mississippi and Louisiana.
Exactly. No
and
question.
And of course, that's just the construction industry. But anyway, well, there's another problem, though, Joan, that Kiplinger points out. Tell us about it.
Well, the main problem we're talking about is education, because you need to get Americans interested in these areas and move them in those directions. And we're saying that people are not going into the skilled areas that are needed.
Well, but why is that? Is that an economic issue, or is this a cultural issue, Joan? What do you think?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question. I just figured that so many kids were becoming computer geeks that you were having trouble getting them into these other areas where we really need them.
Well,
but I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think that there's some of what you were just saying, but you know, Joan, a lot of jobs that are being done these days that need to, as high tech as our marketplace is getting, as high tech as our world is getting, people still need to mow yards. People still need to lay bricks.
Right.
People still need to dig ditches. People still need to nail a 2x4 into place.
That's all unskilled that you're talking about. There.
Well, not necessarily.
Digging ditches is not skilled.
But there have to be managers to do that. People have to know how to lay the ditch out. Believe it or not, there are smart people out there who know how to do these things. I'm talking about the construction and I'm talking about the building and the maintaining of America. See, and I'm not just talking about in the offices. Where, you know, I think those are easier, but in the infrastructure of America, there's a real shortage of Americans, your classic American, and I want to say this very, very carefully, Joan, to work in those jobs, and that's one of the places that the Hispanics have really moved into.
An awful lot of
America's bricks are being laid by Hispanics,
mm-hmm.
by Mexicans.
Yeah.
An awful lot of construction is being done by Mexicans, legal or illegal.
Good.
My point, Joan, is a lot of people are saying, you know, they're complaining about the immigration problem, but I think if everybody's honest about it, this country would be in trouble without those folks.
Oh, it sure would. That's true.
Because they're doing a lot of the stuff that. And what's happening, Joan, and I think this is what's maybe getting people excited, things are happening in the United States that have been happening in other countries for years, and that's the expatriate issue. Expatriates, people who come to work, who they're citizens from somewhere else, but they come to work in your country.
Right.
To do the jobs that your natives don't want to do.
Right. Right. Well, and we've also had skilled workers coming over on, I think they are called H-1B visas.
H-1VB, that's right.
H-1B, yes.
Uh-huh.
And,
but there's controversy about that, isn't there?
There has been, sure. But, you know, it's hard to say because you do need a lot of these workers with specific, a lot of it is scientific and engineering skills.
Well, you know, Joan, in the past, the United States has been the destination of choice for those really smart people from India and Pakistan and China and Japan and you name it, any
yeah.
country all around
right.
the world, they would come here to get an education, the best education in the world, and they didn't want to go back. And they stayed here all their lives. Guess what, Joan? According to David Heenan, who's a member of our Brain Trust, and his new book's out called Flight Capital. You want to read this, Joan. It's a very good book. It speaks exactly to what you and I are talking about. He says two things are happening. Those people who are here from those other countries
right.
are going home. They're mm-hmm. being lured home by their countries. And many of them who in former years would have come over here are not coming. They're staying at home.
That's right.
Very interesting. These are all the higher level, the higher skilled jobs, the professionals, the doctors, lawyers, that kind of thing. Stand by. course, I don't mind if the lawyers stay home, Joan. Quick break, 29 after. Right back with Joan Prine. Stay with us.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the third straight year.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
Congratulations, Jim Blassingame, our small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after. Mr. Wonderful here at your service. That's what Joan Pride calls me anyway. Joan's our good friend and a longtime member of our Brain Trust, and she is with the Kiplinger editor. She's senior editor over there. The Kiplinger editor is Joan. You guys,
I've heard that.
You do call me Mr. Wonderful. I've heard you say that many times.
You're dreaming.
And she is. See what I mean, folks. She's just she loves me, and the website Joan Kiplinger.com is an outstanding one. And I encourage folks to check it out, and they can subscribe to your publications right there at the website, can't they?
Sure can.
Kiplinger.
We love that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the of course, we work off the Kiplinger letter, the flagship letter. By the way, Joan, we had another wonderful visit with the patriarch of your organization, Mr. Austin Kiplinger, on Monday. We just had the best visit with him. You got to listen too, didn't you?
I sure did. I was at my desk at work, and I listened on my computer smallbusinessadvocate.com.
Well said, Joan. Good job.
Did you like that plug?
He
was terrific.
Is he the coolest guy you've ever met, or what? 87 and years old, a witness to a century. I think he liked me calling him that, Joan.
Oh, sure. But,
and by the way, Joan, let's see now. What is today? No, what is it? Just a minute.
Today's the 29th.
Today is the anniversary. Jace, we got to get the anniversary music going. Today is the anniversary, the 82nd anniversary of Kiplinger.
Wow.
Congratulations. I actually have a copy of the original letter, Joan.
Because you received it in the mail.
yeah, right.
Back then.
Right, way back then. I was an original subscriber. But anyway, folks, the publications, the flagship is the Kiplinger letter. That's the 82 years old today. And then also the three biweekly letters, the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the California letter. And then there's also, you guys need to do a hurricane letter, Joan. We're having so many of those.
There you go.
And then you guys got a magazine too, haven't you?
Right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Well, you know, Joan, I folks, you can.
And I'd be happy to give the toll-free number.
Why don't you
like
do that right now, Joan?
Okay. Our toll-free number, if you want to subscribe to any of our publications, is 800-544-0155.
When did I lose control? Joan,
when did you ever have it?
Seriously, folks, I do want to congratulate. Anytime you have a company like Kiplinger that starts out as a small business, small family-owned business, and 82 years later is still really, for all intents and purposes, a small business, although it's not a tiny business.
Family-owned for all those years.
Exactly. That's such a great success story, and I can't let the time go by without congratulating you, as I did Mr. Kiplinger on Monday. And as I've said before, Kiplinger is a model for me as a small business that is also a family business and also in the media business, as you guys are. You guys are a model for me, and I appreciate that. Joan, let's get back into the letter a little bit and talk about these skilled workers that people are having a hard time finding. The tool and die machinists, tool and die makers. See, these aren't office jobs, are they?
No, drafting specialists, welders, electricians, and a lot of these folks, these are highly skilled jobs, but you don't necessarily go to college to get this training.
Do we need fewer colleges and more vocational training, Joan, in this
country?
Well,
I think there are some folks that would say so, sure.
But do we need have we gone through, Joan, have we gone through a 30 or so year period where we've almost made it where our young people thought that they weren't exactly excelling if they didn't go to college?
Well, and that's one of, when I've reported on this in the past, and one of the problems is the parents who don't want to hear about vocational school or welding or being
right.
an electrician.
Right.
Although I have to say, my father used to tell me that I was making a big mistake going to college. He said I should have been a plumber or an electrician.
Or a welder.
Because
see,
all the plumbers and electricians that he dealt with made a tremendous amount of money.
You could have been Joni the Riveter, right?
That's right.
Could have Rosie the Riveter. Well, the when you throw in all of that, plus this thing that you guys point out that fewer foreign workers available to fill the void, and that goes right, that ties in perfectly with David Heenan's book, Flight Capital, where he talks about that exact thing, Joan. This is a real challenge for us. And what David says, Joan, is that this is going to, if we don't start turning out people who can cover these jobs that are not being filled by these people from overseas, he's saying that we're going to become less competitive as a nation.
Well, that's pretty scary.
Well, it can be. So we need to focus on that, folks. And definitely, I think that we need to encourage more vocational training, it seems to me. 2022, we're going to get right back after these messages and talk about some more things that Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in your world today. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate. And Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And my website, folks, is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Please check it out when you get a chance. And don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. And don't forget to check out the blog. I really would like to hear what you think about the blog when you get a chance. And
you've got
you can
a
also,
blog?
I have a blog. How about
wow,
that? It's
I'm
called
impressed.
It's Jim's blog.
Ooh.
And you can go. You can get to it from the homepage. Plus, you can go to it directly at jimsblog.biz. How about that? It's an audio blog, Joan. There are all of the interviews
wow.
that we've done, plus some articles are there, too, folks. You can read stuff, too. And there are not too many audio blogs out there. You know us. We don't do things
like... I didn't know you could have audio blogs. I just assumed they were all...
Well, we didn't know you couldn't do it either. That's the reason we did it. I've done a lot of things like that, Joan. I didn't know I couldn't
believe
do it. Joan, let's move over and talk about the economy. You guys say that profits are going to be down a little bit next year. But, you know, Joan, down a little bit is kind of, it needs to be explained, doesn't it? Because profits have been doing really well, for especially for major corporations for the last couple of years, hasn't it?
Yeah, because we're saying 14% this year will drop to 8%. I mean, on average, I would take 8%. That's
yeah,
not bad.
Absolutely. Yeah, you got to put that in perspective, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
So you say oil and gas firms' profits will plummet. Does that mean prices are coming down, Joan?
Well, I know, hard to believe, but what we say, price increases will only be a fraction of this year's. In other words, you've seen the steepest increases you're going to see.
Yeah, I hope so. From
your
mouth to God's ears, I hope we can get those prices down. The Federal Reserve, ladies and gentlemen, Kiplinger says that the Federal Reserve has got one more hike this year, Joan.
Now, when did they last raise rates?
Just last week.
Okay, and what was our forecast on that?
You said that they would raise rates.
And what did you say?
I said that they shouldn't.
No, I thought you said that they wouldn't.
Oh, I did?
That's what my sources tell me. See, I was away for a couple of weeks.
I may have said that.
And my sources reported to me that you took us to task.
I may have said that
in a
weak moment. I may have said that. But I still think they shouldn't have. But I will tell you this, Joan, what that tells you, I think.
No, what that tells me is you challenged our forecast. Never challenge a Kiplinger forecast.
What that tells me, though, Joan, is that the Fed thinks the economy is strong enough to withstand a 1-2 punch from hurricanes and a rate increase.
Well, let's hope they're right.
I hope they're right.
Because if they're wrong, we're in big trouble.
Well, the other thing is when the Fed makes an interest rate adjustment, they're not looking at this month or next month. They're looking at 6 months, 9 months from now.
Right, and I was just a mere baby, but you know you remember stagflation and stagflation was a very nasty kind of spiraling kind of thing. It was very hard to get out of once you were stuck in it.
It was a mess, and so we did get out of it. It took a lot of pain to get out of it. But here's the scary part, Joan. You guys are forecasting that the Fed is going to raise rates all the way up the Fed funds rate, all the way to 4.5. That makes prime 7.5. That makes what small business owners borrow in the, approaching the 10 range or over.
Well, do you think financing then is going to be getting tougher in terms of finding it? Or, I mean, are banks also tightening up standards too?
Well, that's a good question because there are two issues here, aren't there? There's the liquidity issue.
Right, the cost of money.
The availability of money, which is one thing.
Yeah.
And then there's the price of money. And so both of those have an impact on whether small business owners borrow money.
Right.
If it's available but it's at a 10% rate, maybe I can't make that work in my model.
Exactly.
In my plans. But if it's or what if it's at 6% but the bank won't let me have the money? So you've got both of those issues going on, and I don't see any tightening of the liquidity, Joan, coming in myself, but I do see rates going up and that's gonna slow the economy down a little bit. And of course,
I would think so.
That's what the Fed wants, I think.
My guess is if they're not tightening standards, and I would guess they are not because they probably want to be lending at these higher rates.
Right. Right.
But so the money may be out there if you can afford it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
Joan, let's move down to the bottom of page two and talk about airlines. You guys point out that the shakeout, the big airline shakeout, may be about to happen. Mergers.
Right, and we just had one that was in the news this week, U.S. Airways and America West.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And then we say there's more coming. We say Northwest with Delta, and
that's
then
an
United
one.
With Continental.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be interesting. But those are all of those except one, except for Continental. I don't think – is Continental considered a legacy carrier? I guess they are, aren't they?
I think so.
Those are all legacy carriers. These are the
seems
people.
Seems less so than the others, but.
Mm-hmm. The legacy carrier, folks, is an air carrier who was around before deregulation. JetBlue is not a legacy carrier.
Right. Independence Air is not. Southwest
right.
is not.
Right.
And I guess America West is not.
Probably so. But you also predict that there are going to be some failures.
Right. And, in fact, we don't think that this new U.S. Airways is going to be created is going to do very well.
Right.
But we're also concerned about ATA, which I think used to be AirTran,
mm-hmm.
I think, and then also Independence Air.
Right. Joan, let's move over. Before we do, on the airline thing there, the good news is, if you think about it, look at how, with all the bankruptcies, with all the all the turmoil and everything going on, people are still flying around productively at a rate that they can afford and basically, knock wood, safely.
I heard that.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, Joan, I mean, that's an ineffective business model for a lot of these companies, but from an execution standpoint, it's a good industry, isn't it?
That's true.
From an execution standpoint, they got some problems. And, of course, the gas prices aren't helping anything. Folks, when we come back, we're going to talk a little politics with Joan Pride, and especially how the funding of the Katrina and the Rita reconstruction are going to be paid for. Tintel, stay with us. We'll be right back.
Stand by me. So dark.
Welcome back. It's 7-till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. And one more time, I want to wish a happy anniversary to the great folks at the Kiplinger Letters, the Kiplinger editors there in Washington, D.C. Joan, congratulations, and please be sure to pass along my best wishes to all the folks there at Kiplinger on 82 great years.
Thank you, Jim. I will certainly do that.
And it's just a great company. Joan, let's talk a little bit of politics. You know, Joan, when we had a surplus, that kind of kept the lid on spending when nothing else would, because nobody wanted to burst the surplus bubble.
Isn't it?
Exactly. It was I never saw that coming. And nobody wanted to spend more money because if your project put us over a certain point, it would burst the bubble and we'd go into deficit spending. Nobody wanted to do that.
Right.
So when 9/11 happened, And we opened the floodgates to fight terrorism, to secure the homeland, et cetera, then all bets were off. And so not only did we do that, but the pork started rolling in.
Yes.
And nothing has stopped it. Not even, you know, not one single presidential veto by a Republican president, which is just absolutely phenomenal to me. I never would have thought that would have happened. Has stopped the pork from rolling out until Katrina. Now tell us how things may be changing a little bit, John.
Well, there's a lot of concern that the way the levees were built was faulty, and part of the problem there apparently was that there wasn't enough funding for those levees and for those construction projects.
There were also some environmental controversies there too.
Right.
Environmentalists got involved as well.
The problem was that a lot of that money was siphoned off onto other pet projects of lawmakers.
Right.
And that people are upset about that now.
But now the two most, what I'm calling the two most expensive days in the history of America, mm-hmm. the Tuesday and Wednesday after Katrina hit, when the United States government didn't move into New Orleans quick enough, and now George Bush has all this guilt and all this PR to make up for, this bad PR to make up for, and so now the federal government's committing $200+ billion to rebuild that area, and that money's got to come from somewhere. And are any of these politicians going to give back some of their pork, Joan?
Well, I think that's to be determined. We're saying expect some pork to be eliminated, which will be pretty huge.
Yeah. Well, I think eliminated is probably the wrong word, Joan. It may be transferred from one place to another, from a tennis court in Sheboygan to a bridge in New Orleans.
Well, I guess pork is in the eyes of the beholder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the point is, Katrina and Rita are causing them to look at these in a different way, aren't they?
Yes, exactly.
And that's something I think is important to point out. And so, folks, if you thought you were going to get a bridge, you might get it and you might not because of the way.
Or a tennis court.
That's exactly right. Or a tennis court. Joan, let's move down and talk a little bit about HR on page 3, the overweight workers issue. Tell us what Kiplinger's saying about that.
Well, this statistic is amazing. We're saying that it costs an employer up to $2,500 a year in related health care bills and also, you know, lost work hours for every employee who is considered obese.
What is, when you say overweight, were you guys just being sensitive?
As opposed to obese, you mean?
Yes, yes.
Well, we use both words here. So.
Oh, you do? Okay, there it is.
Yeah.
There it is. Well, so what does that mean, though? Is that like over 50 pounds, over 100 pounds? What is the
Well, we don't define it, so I don't know.
Well, I'm so glad that... I'm a little bit overweight. I need to lose a couple of pounds, and so I hope
couple?
I'm not costing
two.
Okay, maybe three. I hope I'm not costing my company 25. What are they doing? Is it just through illnesses and probably?
Well, I guess obese people are considered to be at higher risk for high blood pressure, heart attack, diabetes.
Diabetes
mm-hmm. is a good example of a disease that costs a lot of money and to manage.
Isn't that becoming a little bit of an epidemic in the United States?
Obesity.
I mean,
especially among younger people.
Mm-hmm. Because and a lot of the doctors are attributing it to the weight issue, aren't they?
Right. Oh, sure.
Yeah. No question about it. Joan, the Homeland Security. We just got a few seconds here. Homeland Security. Right now, FEMA is under Homeland Security.
Yes.
But it may not be for long, right?
Well, it used to be independent. Now, then it got moved under Homeland Security, and now we're thinking it might end up being independent again, we're saying it will be.
It was pretty effective when it was independent. Now it's
right.
Not so much, right?
That's the impression that the government has, right?
Yeah, so maybe it'll be independent. I think that might be a good idea.
By
the way, folks, I'd like to point out that FEMA is not a first responder. Local, state, and federal, and state and local governments are first responders in catastrophes, not FEMA. Joan, thank you for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
Happy anniversary, baby.
Yep.
We'll see you next time. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.